You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 13 of Sports Like Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, episode 13?
13. It's lucky number 13 is here, man. I mean, I can't believe that we keep getting through these and not really even realizing how far we've come, but hey, it's great. Hopefully another 13 is down the pipeline for us.
Yeah, we'll get there easily. Let me ask you, do you even remember anything from episode 1?
Besides talking about, like, why kind of we got into doing this, no, not really. I have no idea what topics we were discussing or anything.
Yeah, me either. That's just, it's been so long ago, man.
Yeah.
Let's just focus on the present.
On the present, yeah.
All right, let's go to our football segment, Tackling Life, and we're going to start off with the new league that was announced, the Alliance of American Football League. It consists of 8 teams, and it will begin February 2019. Let me ask you this, man. With the XFL coming out, now this league, is it too much football?
I think so. I think, unfortunately, I think this football league will obviously be a little bit more, you know, watchable probably by the general average football fan just because of the people that are involved in it. You know, having Bill Polian in it, you know, who has a background of being, like, within the locker room and being part of organizations, obviously. So I think that can go a long way to making sure they're putting out the right product. And who knows? I'm pretty sure XFL is not going to make the same mistake, and they'll probably do their due diligence as well and make sure that the, you know, the competition on the field is actually really good compared to what it was in the past. But I think, yeah, I mean, with all the stuff that we already have issues with as far as football is concerned, with, you know, the helmet-to-helmet hits and concussions and, you know, long-term effects of these players now, it's like, you know, I see the good in it because at least this is another way for some guys to get actual in-game reps against other competition and show NFL, you know, teams that, hey, you know, come after us because we can actually play. And, you know, because obviously the NFL players are probably going to get paid a lot better than any of these guys. But I just think that there's got to be some kind of break. And then, you know, it's like there's a season for football, and, you know, then transition is to basketball, then transition is to baseball, you know, and I think that's kind of like how the, you know, American pastime for all the sports kind of has like a segment that's, you know, played out through the year. So that's just my, I just think that it's probably going to be a little too much. And it might actually end up even hurting the NFL in some ways because of there just ends up being too much football during the week.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. We have the perfect solution right now for football. We got 16 weeks, and then you have the playoffs. So when football's over, that leaves us craving more. So now you're going to have pretty much football year-round. I mean, for the casual football fan, yeah, that's they probably will check it out. But for hardcore football fans, do I really want to watch the XFL that failed a long time ago? And now another league, it's just too much. And I think it should just, I don't think these leagues will last long anyway.
No.
I'd probably give it maybe 3 years tops.
Right.
So if it works out and it's a good product, then yeah, because it'll give more guys opportunities to showcase their talents and then possibly move up to the NFL. That's the only positive that can come out of it.
Right.
And it'll be more fantasy football, but it probably, hopefully it works out, but I don't see it working out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's already a 53-man roster in the current NFL, right? So when you look at, unless they expand and add, like, 2 more teams to where there's now, all of a sudden, 106 more spots available. So now some of these guys who are in these other leagues can get showcased and have a chance to probably make it. But it's just, I mean, there's only so much to go around. I mean, these are the best of the best that are playing in the NFL. I mean, every team also has a practice squad so that if somebody gets hurt, there's somebody that can step right in into that position and play. So I just don't know how much value it's really going to bring. And, you know, but at the end of the day, it's all about money. And that's all these guys care about, you know, starting up for that reason. So, you know, good luck to them. But I don't think I'll be really crazy about tuning into the other leagues.
It just depends on the players they get. Like, if I'm one of the leagues now, I'm going after Colin Kaepernick.
Absolutely.
I'm going after Johnny Manziel. Those would be the two big names to, you know, get everything going.
It wouldn't even hurt to go after Tim Tebow.
Or Peyton Manning. Hey, Peyton, why don't you come in and throw a couple of passes? But that won't happen.
Right.
Now, let's move on to our next segment. Well, not next segment, next topic. Should the Cleveland Browns draft Sam Darnold at number one?
I think they should. I think they could probably really can't go wrong with any of the couple of quarterbacks that are being mentioned, with Allen and Rosen and Darnold, Mayfield. I mean, honestly, this is one of those few years where there's not that one outstanding quarterback that's standing out. I mean, even Lamar Jackson. I mean, I really like him too. And it's like one of those drafts where, you know, somebody that gets picked in the third round turns out to be way better than the guy that got drafted in the first round. Like, it just has the feels for that, in my opinion. But if it's like the Browns should do exactly something opposite of what they're thinking, because of the past history, is like, oh, we're going to go after that guy. Well, and another team is picking up this guy. Well, let's go pick up the guy that somebody else wants, because that's probably going to be better for us.
And then on top of that, at number four, they can get the defensive lineman, Chubb, to go along with last year's pick. I forgot his name. I know he's from A&M. What was his name?
I know you're talking about the defensive tackle, right?
Garrett. Is it Garrett?
Miles Garrett.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good pickup.
Yeah.
And that, you mentioned Lamar Jackson. You know how everybody wants him to switch to receiver?
Yeah, I saw that.
And in college, wasn't he a better quarterback than Johnny Manziel?
Oh, yeah.
So why didn't they ask Manziel to go to receiver, like play slot receiver?
Yeah, I mean, he literally looks like, I think he could and should be a better version of Teddy Bridgewater. That's what I see in him. And, I mean, and he stayed in college. I mean, he could have came out a year earlier, too, but he didn't, you know. So I just think that he has the tools, but it's just like one of those things. Like, let's just say he gets picked a lot later, and then he turns out to be better than Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, all those guys. So, you know, we'll just have to see. And it's like there are some, you know, great players coming out of this draft, but it's not as deep as, you know, that they have been in the past. Like, you know, when Cam Newton came, we knew Cam Newton was head and shoulders above all these guys. Even I thought that Deshaun Watson should have been that, you know, like he was head and shoulders above, you know, better than most of these other guys. So, you know, Andrew Luck, when he came out, same thing, you know, so he was head and shoulders above everybody else.
So who do you think will be a good team for Lamar Jackson? I'm thinking Pittsburgh. Could you imagine him with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, all the stuff you can do, Juju Schuster, all the different things you can bring?
Absolutely. No, that would be. And then, you know, if they draft him now, you know, have him learn behind Big Ben for a year, maybe two at the most, and then, yeah, man. I mean, because those other guys are still pretty young, so.
All right, so let's talk about some of the guys that were the signs since the last podcast. We had Frank Gore and Brock Osweiler going to the Dolphins. We had Mike Wallace going to the Philadelphia. That's just, oh my God.
Cowboys
going to
have?
Yeah, we could have a lot of people, man. We don't have the money.
Yeah.
Even though we did restructure Jason Witten's contract to open up a little, but that's not going to do much.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your coach. They signed a tight end, Eric Ebron. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man, that's a great pickup. I think he would go really well with to play opposite of Jack Doyle, and, you know, Ebron's a good blocker, and he's a, you know, good receiver as well. So I think it'd be a good compliment to Andrew Luck. You know, hopefully we're able to get a really quality running back in the draft, and I think, you know, that'll pretty much put our offense together, you know, going forward for the time being. And I think we definitely need to be going younger, but bringing in that experience with Eric Ebron. You know, he was catching passes from Matthew Stafford, so you go from Matthew Stafford to Andrew Luck is not really a bad deal.
That's not bad at all. And let's talk about the Cowboys signing. We signed wide receiver Allen Hurns from the Jaguars. Joe Thomas, not that Joe Thomas, though. The Joe Thomas that was a linebacker from the Packers, him. We signed the offensive lineman Fleming, which that was a good signing, because now we can move Lionel Collins back to his right tackle spot where he's comfortable. And hopefully our offensive line can get back to really being the best in the NFL. Speaking of the best in the NFL, let's talk about the guys that played on our teams that were the most underappreciated. And I'm going to let you go first.
On my Colts, I'm going to have to go with Bob Sanders. I mean, from that safety position, I know he had a lot of injuries. Knick-knack injuries that kept him off the field a lot. But man, when he played, he was.
That defense just looked so much better.
Oh yeah, super. I mean, he might not have been over the top, kind of like where Paul Amala was, being at the line of scrimmage and stuff like that. But when it came to like hitting people, covering people, being able to play different types of coverages, he was just good, and he was just a leader, vocal leader. So, he held it down for that, those four guys back there in the DB position. So I would have to definitely go with Bob Sanders.
So with Bob Sanders, when he left the coach, didn't he go sign with I forgot who he signed with after that.
I think he signed with.
I want to say the Titans.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was on the field, it was just crazy because he's what, maybe 5'10".
Oh yeah.
But he just threw his body around so much, and he made the most of his opportunity in the NFL. Yeah. So I give him that. And Peyton Manning, you should thank him. Him and Dominique Rhodes, because you weren't the MVP of that Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So with the Cowboys, man, there's so many people you can choose from, but I'm going to go with somebody that just went to the booth, to the broadcast. That's Tony Romo. When he was here, he was hit or miss. But that's always been the Cowboys' history. Now, since we've had the triplets back in the day, Tony Romo has been the best quarterback that we've had since Troy Aikman, especially statistically. We already know he's going to make that one big play that makes you say, wow, and he's going to have that other play where you're going to be like, what the hell were you thinking?
Right.
But now that he's gone and we have Dak, and a lot of people still want Tony Romo, even after seeing the success that Dak Prescott had, and I really don't understand that. Cowboys fan is one of the fan bases where we have these unrealistic expectations, especially when you have Jason Garrett as your head coach.
Yep.
So I think now we're coming down a little bit, and we're realizing as long as the redhead guy is there, we're not going to be any good because he's going to hold us back.
Yeah, I think that's honestly wishful thinking on your part to think that there are Cowboys fans who are lowering their expectations. Nobody is lowering their expectations.
Sir,
every year.
You know I'm not lowering my expectation. I'm just trying to, it's just
to make yourself, yeah, to make yourself feel a little bit more like it is what it is going into next year. Like, I already know the inevitable, but we got to stick through it. No, but I think Tony Romo, to the fact that he wasn't even drafted, so you already know, the struggle that he had to go to be in a position that he was to, be a starter, but then actually be successful. Because he wasn't heavily touted, So, even Tom Brady, he went way later in the draft, but at least he was drafted,
Yeah.
So you can at least say that people were still looking at him. Like, nobody clearly was looking at Tony Romo. And, I think he went way above what expectations should have been, because it's like and then especially considering all the previous guys that were quarterbacks right before him, you were like, as long as he's a little bit better than any of those guys, you would have taken it. But he was way better than most of those guys. So, and Cowboys fans, you cannot be greedy because there is really no drop off from Romo to Prescott.
Yeah, and if Romo,
and
would
it's
have,
not like, oh, we went and picked up a quarterback that played in the league 7 years, so he's good, and now we're going to go pay him this money because he's a free agent. No, you got a guy straight out of the draft. You can build around. You can. And at the same time, you got a guy that's a running back that could go right with him. So, you literally have no complaints, shouldn't have no complaints for the next 10 to 12 years. And all you have to do is build around those two guys.
And work on that defense, for sure.
So, every 3-4 years, you're not going to have maybe a great season. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody gets suspended, whatever, changes the whole complexion. But all the other years, you should definitely be able to compete for a Super Bowl, at least an NFC Championship berth, which, instead of thinking, Cowboys fans, realistic fans, your expectations should be, making the playoffs, advancing past that first game. And then it's like, okay, how can we get to the NFC Championship game? And then it's like, okay, how can we get to the Super Bowl? And then try to do it in gradual increments. What the Eagles just did was not really the norm.
You
usually just don't just turn around and just go on this crazy run. And at least even when the Seahawks did it, you kind of knew. Their defense was so stout, and they were proving it all season. But the Saints were right there, the Vikings, if they didn't get that, you know, Lucky played, and they would have played the Saints.
And I think I think the Saints would have got them too.
Exactly. So, you know, and that's all it takes. And you need those kind of breaks. So, for the Cowboys' sake, man, just figure out a way not to play the Packers.
Oh my! Well, and the ref. We don't need any refs. We need to make our own calls too. All right, next, our next segment, we're going to go down the lane. This is Sports Life Talk. All right, sir, we're going to jump right into the down the lane segment and talk about the Memphis Grizzlies and how they lost by 61 points. They got beat 140-79. This is an NBA team full of professionals. What are your thoughts on this?
Man, they could have probably sent the Grizzlies D-League team and probably put up 79 points. I don't even have a problem putting up 79 points. But how are you going to give up 140 points while only scoring 79 points is what I have a problem with. Because, I mean, you know, sometimes shots just don't go in. You know, it's a make or miss league, I understand. You know, 102, 104-79, I'd be like, you know, everybody has those bad days. But 61 points in a regulation 48-minute game, I mean, even where the starters of the other team don't even have to play the fourth quarter, I mean, I'm like, I know that some of their guys are their main players and star players are out, but, I mean, come on. Like, that's just – I mean, at some point, the coach got to be like, hey, just hold the ball so that the other team don't get the ball.
Serge, it got
– the whole shot clock. I don't care.
It got so bad that I think you and I could went out there and got at least 15 points together.
Probably. I mean, shoot. I mean, it's, there's just no way that should happen. I mean, because – and then it's like – and then you obviously they're one of the worst teams obviously this year, along with, you know, the Mavs and Brooklyn and Phoenix and stuff like that. So, and I know a lot of these teams of the Bulls, you know, tanking, right? Tanking has like been a big, really big topic, and you know the NBA is trying to, you know, change up some of the rules and figuring out different ways to, you know, prevent teams from tanking, which that'll never happen. There's no way to prevent tanking. That's just always it's going to be there. But I mean, like the Mavs, that's the one thing I'll give credit for them is, even though I know the owner wants them to tank and the players know that, but Coach Carlisle is not about to put those guys out there and just go tell them, like, hey, let's just go ahead and lose by 40. Like, every game that the Mavs play, I don't really watch a lot of their games because it's kind of frustrating to just see how the team is, but whenever I do turn it on or whenever I go check the box score, we're always in the game, at least going into the fourth quarter. And even in the fourth quarter, I mean, we might lose by a couple points. I mean, we almost beat the Raptors last week in Toronto. So, I mean, and that's without, you know, one, you know, Wes Matthews has been out, you know, a few weeks, and he's probably, you know, a top three player on our team now. So I just don't understand how you're going to lose by 61 points. I mean, 61 points is a – I mean, that's like two games worth.
Yeah, that's just crazy. And if I'm the commissioner, I'm looking at Memphis, I'm saying y'all got to get together because there's tanking, and then that's what you just did. That's beyond tanking.
Yeah.
That's an
embarrassment. I mean, Michael Jordan could have came out there and dropped 30.
He'd have got 50.
Like, Kobe would have got 81 all over again.
He'd have got 100 because that was ridiculous. So let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they've gotten Tristan Thompson back and Kevin Love. What does this mean for them going forward?
Man, this means LeBron doesn't have to do everything by himself. I think having Kevin Love back. I mean, I watched their three games since he's been back. I mean, he's playing pretty phenomenal, and he's shooting. And I think, you know, because he had a hand injury, he didn't have to obviously worry as much about conditioning, or quote unquote, as they call it, being in basketball shape. So the transition was a little easier, but I could also tell, like, he's got a little bit leaner in those weeks that he was out. He's got a little bit more pep in his step. And also, I think the whole time it just looked like he was working on his 3-point shooting because, I mean, he's been, I want to say he's shooting like, it's only been three games sample, but I think he's been shooting like over 60% on his threes. And they're all going like nothing but net. And the other thing that I also notice is like now when he gets the ball in the post, he's literally like not even thinking, he's just going. And I think that's just knowing that, hey, I'm the number two guy. I'm the clear number two guy. I don't have to worry about Kyrie. I don't have to worry about Isaiah Thomas if he was healthy and still here. And so he has more freedom. And I think he just always had that confidence ever since they won the title that, you know, I belong here. And LeBron loves playing with him just because he's also another player, just like LeBron, maybe not to that level, but has a very high IQ. You know, he can pass the ball. Obviously, he's a great rebounder. We all know that. And he can obviously score, you know, down in the post and outside. So it just spreads the floor for LeBron to be able to work. I mean, when they do that, when they run that pick and roll now, you know, before he had to run the pick and roll with Larry Nance. Okay, he can't shoot the three. Tristan Thompson, same thing. But now you bring in Kevin Love. It's like you pick your poison. It's like in the way that LeBron's playing, you know, he's just going to drive at the basket if you don't double-team him. If you do double-team him, he's going to kick it back out to Kevin Love, whether he's shooting a three or if he's, you know, rolling to the goal. So, and even if you, even when he's rolling to the goal and if you collapse on him, more than likely you're leaving Larry Nance's man, and all he has to do is throw it up, and because he's a great passer, and Larry Nance gets an easy lob. That's what he lives for. And it's like those kind of plays energize the team, the fans, and then in addition to that, you know, if Larry Nance feels like he's getting way easier passes than he did when he was with the Lakers, it's going to make him want to play better on defense. And it's just like a trickling effect to the rest of the team. And I think when those guys get back, you know, they still got Kyle Korver, who's active. I think his brother passed away.
Yeah, the brother passed away.
You know, Jetty Osman. Like, I mean, just to rotate. I mean, they're going to get to a point where it's just like they have too many guys and not enough minutes to give. But that's a good problem to have because, you know, in the event that somebody does get hurt, you have enough guys on the bench to step in. Number two, when you have blowouts, whether you're losing or you're winning, and you just want to put in basically your third string guys on the court so that you're not, you know, burning minutes and using energy from any of these guys that are your eight, part of your 8-9 man rotation in the playoffs. So, man, I mean, things are looking up for the Cavaliers, especially with all the other, you know, injuries that are going on, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, here in a minute. But I mean, it's great for them, definitely. And you know, I know that they're playing Brooklyn today, so that should be another win for them.
Let me ask you this: it was probably good for Kevin Love too to get away from the game mentally. And think about Tyronn Lue, how stressed out he is. How much pressure is it to play with LeBron?
Oh, I mean, it's super because, you know, at the end of the day, it's championship or bust. So when you have that mentality, it's like, you know, if you just looked at his history, he played with six or seven years in Minnesota. Like, okay, all I had to do was go and drop 25 and 14 every year. But it wasn't getting me into the playoffs. You go from not making the playoffs to coming onto a team. No, we're not going out to the playoffs. We're going for a championship. You know, so it's like a whole, you know, new way. So that first year, I mean, he was, you know, he got hurt. Obviously, he got his arm pulled out of his socket. But, I mean, no, I agree with you. I think it was really good for him to be away, to be able to really understand and figure out everything that's going on with the team. And even, you know, he came out, and I'm sure you read the little Players Tribune thing he had about dealing with some – mental issues,
yes.
You know, just having some kind of, heart racing and things like that, like in the middle of the game and, you know, not being able to play. And then obviously when he got hurt, and I think it really let him be able to really kind of focus in on himself, you know, really, really get mentally right, more so than physically. And so when he does come to the court to practice and stuff like that, and now, you know, while he was gone, all these, you know, new players came in. Now you're able to kind of see out there like, okay, now when I go back in there, I'm clearly number two. There's no Isaiah Thomas here either who's going to be taking all those shots away from me. I'm going to get the ball. I need to be aggressive. And I now, you know, watching George Hill, you know, where does he like the ball? Watching Rodney Hood, watching Larry Nance, like, oh, man, like, I got basically Tristan Thompson from 5 years ago because this dude can jump out the building.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's – and he's got all the energy to go get it because he's still young. You know, playing pick and roll with Jordan Clarkson because, you know, he's a speedy point guard, but who can play the two and the one. So it's like there's just so many different combination lineups they can throw out there. So I think he was chomping at the bit to get back because he's like, man, I think this is probably one of the most well-rounded team since I've been here. You know, because we're always like top heavy with LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie. But then after that, it was kind of like a little bit of a drop off. Now it's like got all these young guys, energetic guys, and the way the game is being played right now, we need these type of guys as opposed to always having older guys on our team year after year. I mean, you had James Jones. I mean, Kyle Korver's still on the team, but, you know, it's just like you can eventually just kind of get to a point. I mean, you know, that first year when they won the championship, they got Dela Dova as your backup quarterback, you know.
And the crazy thing about that, they could have beat Golden State with him if the coach would have used common sense and not ran those guys into the ground. Because he gave Steph Curry all he could handle. You got to play him physical. You got to get him out of his game.
You got to get under his skin. I mean, and you need one of those guys on your team. Every championship team has to have that one.
Yeah, you got
to
have him.
You know, that's a little knucklehead or whatever you want to call it. But, no, I agree. And that's one of the reasons why he got fired the next year in the middle of the season. Because he wasn't – because of the way he ran – his system in Europe when he coming over here, not understanding how it is to adjust, but him also, like, he came to the team, oh, we're re-signing Kyrie, and that was it. Expectation of trying to make the playoffs. Oh, LeBron's coming back? Oh, we got to go win the finals? Like, so for him too, trying to be stepped into that position, I mean, if Tyronn Lue is going through this now, like, imagine what David Blatt was probably going through. And he's been coaching for so many years, you know, overseas and stuff, so in professionals. So, I mean, it's great for the team that they got him back. And I think, you know, the fact that they were able to – they gave up 79 points in the first half to the Raptors on Wednesday.
Yeah, they still pulled
and
that game out.
They were down 15. They came back because they stepped up their intensity because they knew that they have to make sure that Toronto doesn't feel like, yeah, we've been the better team all season. Oh, this is that year we can get LeBron. But LeBron was going to do anything in his powers to make sure that, no, I'm going to make sure that you guys still know that in order to go to the finals and represent the East, you guys got to go through me. And if you guys can beat me, hey, fair and square, my team's healthy, your team's healthy, you guys beat me, cool, I'm good with it. But he can live with the results because he knows he put in his work. But I think he was more excited to know that, yeah, he was helping carry the team, but then other guys stepped up because they were like, because it, you know, it's just like back in 2015, Kevin Love never been in the playoffs, Kyrie never been in the playoffs. Well, look at Dorian Clarkson, never been in the playoffs, Larry Nance never been in the playoffs, Rodney Hood, you know, so... The George Hill is really the only one that has some experience playing with the Spurs, but and the Pacers. So it's like they got the right complement of guys, and if everybody stays healthy, I mean, they're going to obviously be able to make that run in the East. But I mean, depending on who they face, and you know, you never know.
All right, so you and I, we both agree that LeBron is the best player we've ever seen play.
Yep.
So all around player. Right. So now, when LeBron leaves the game, we got to find somebody else that can be, we always say, who's going to be the next Jordan?
Yeah.
So you and I, we're going to try to figure out who's going to be the next LeBron. So I'm going to let you go first. I think you already know who I think is the next LeBron, but I'm going to let you go.
I'm going to have to go with Ben Simmons, man.
Thief.
Go ahead. Well, it's more because of the all-around game is being a big – I mean, he's basically 2 inches taller than LeBron. You know, obviously, he doesn't weigh as much, but he's super athletic. He can finish with both hands. And outside of being able to not really have a jump shot, I mean, but you can still figure out a way to get 15, 17 points a game. I mean, if you can get 15, 17 points a game, but you never shoot a single jumper, and you probably barely shoot maybe a couple of free throws a game, that means you know how to play basketball.
Yeah.
And you're fundamentally sound. Because the rebound and assisting part, I mean, the assisting part is the easiest thing for him. I think if you look at the way
Hey, not to cut you off. Speaking of assists, you saw that pass he threw the other night?
Oh, my God. That's what I'm saying. So his passing skills right now in his first year is way ahead of LeBron in his first year. I mean, LeBron's obviously way better passer now, but – I mean, at that time, if we were to compare them first year, I mean, he's leaps and bounds ahead of him in both rebounding and the assist category. And the way the game is being played is perfect for him. And all he has to do this coming up summer, the following summer, and the following summer is gradually make mid-range jump shots, long jump shots, and eventually get a 35, 36%, 37% three-point shooter. Dude's going to be unstoppable. And he is the player that I feel like, outside of Russell Westbrook, that can probably legitimately average a triple-double for not only one season, but multiple seasons.
Well, see, you and I agree. It's Ben Simmons. And you just think about the team that they have with Embiid and him. All you got to do is just surround them with shooters.
Yep.
And you got Markelle Fultz, if he ever comes back. Look at their team. Who's going to beat them? They're going to be running the East in the next 5 to 10 years. They should be running the East. So we both agree on Ben Simmons. I think he needs to bulk up a little bit just so he can get down there in the post. He gets a jump shot, the guy will be unstoppable.
Absolutely.
That's all I got to say about that, because you pretty much said everything.
It's kind of where, I mean, look at LeBron now. He's having the best offensive year of his career in year 15 and age 33 with all those over 52,000 minutes that he's already played. But to think that, like, because even when he was in Miami, I mean, he had one year where he was decently pretty above his normal average shooting the three. But I think this year and last year is when he actually, just because the game has evolved into shooting more threes, because if the other team is shooting threes and you're shooting twos, well, you're always going to be behind the game. So he knows, like, in order for my impact to have his impact that he was doing 10 years ago doesn't have the same impact right now if he doesn't elevate his game and be able to shoot threes. So the three-point game shot has, I mean, completely changed the way that every player who's trying to be great has to think. If they don't have that as an arsenal, then, like, that's what I'm pretty sure one of the things that LeBron's going to make sure that to do with this with his Suns is going to be being able to shoot the three, because that's something that he didn't have, you know, coming into the league, because the three-point shot wasn't that, you know, it was just a part of the game. That was it. Now it is the main part of the game outside of running pick and roll, you know. So I think, Ben Simmons is going to be the real, real deal. And, you know, as long as he doesn't have any injury issues, you know, God willing, man, he's going to be – we're in good hands with basketball, I can tell you that.
Does he have a nickname yet?
No, not really.
Well, that means he hasn't arrived yet, so we got to work on a nickname.
Right. I'm sure Kenny Smith will probably come up with one.
Yeah, pretty much. Speaking of working on something, we all know how exciting the NBA playoffs are, and we've heard this before about possibly reseeding – once the it's around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't just be East versus West. It'd just be how you seed it. What are your thoughts on that, Serge?
I think I would be open to it. I think just the way it would just, you know, change things up. It would spice it up a little bit. It would just give it the not knowing, I think, would be pretty cool. You know, just because you really don't know on any given night, you know, that way, you know, even if somebody has home court advantage, you really can't be sure the other team can't beat them, especially, you know, because most people feel like the West teams are way better than the East teams. But, like, if Utah, for example, who's in the 8th seed now in the West, but if they were in the East, they'd probably be a top 3 seed. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, but does that mean that if they were in the East or if they got reseeded and they played Toronto, you know, in the second round, that they could beat them? No, you don't know that until they play each other. So I think the unknowns would be kind of cool. The only downside is what it would do is completely eliminate rivalries. And that's one of the things that I wouldn't like about it is now, you know, because there's no East versus West, like, yeah, you play certain teams for, you know, four times a year, twice at home, twice on the road, when you're within your own conference. But then, so if those same two teams were to play, especially if this, you know, series was 2-2 and there was a couple of little, you know, scrimmages going on within those games during the regular season. So now when the playoffs start, you're kind of like more excited because you're going to get to see those two teams go on and go at it again. But if you do the reseeding, that would be the one thing that would get eliminated. But I think they should at least, you know, flirt with the idea and, you know, give it a trial run, you know, for a couple of years and see how it works out. And if it doesn't, you can always go back to your old ways.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. The rivalries, that's one thing that needs to stay. But I would also love to see, like, maybe LeBron had to take on Golden State in the second round.
Right.
And that'll bring some intrigue.
Absolutely.
All right, speaking of intrigue, we got Duke versus Kansas tonight.
Ooh.
So I'm going to – we don't like Duke.
No, I definitely don't like
so
Duke.
If you don't know anything else about us in college basketball, we do not like Duke.
Yeah.
We like
– and I was very disappointed – I didn't really have a high hope for North Carolina this year, especially considering how much better than we were last year and how we ended up finishing, obviously. But just because of the talent level alone, I'm still gonna pick Duke just because of my basketball senses are kicking in and thinking that Duke's probably still going to win. The experience that they have, you know, with Grayson Allen, as long as you can trip nobody.
Somebody can trip tonight.
probably be Graham.
Somebody's going down.
But, no, I think it'll be a really good game. You got obviously two of the best coaches in college basketball, two of the most historic, you know, college basketball teams in the country and for generations, obviously, with all the great players that they put out into the NBA. So I think it's going to be a good game, and I hope Kansas wins, but I'm going to just think that Duke is probably going to pull it out.
I think whoever wins this, they would have to play against Villanova, wouldn't they, before they got there? Ooh, so I'm going to go Duke just because I think Duke will be a better game for Villanova. And Coach K, man, he when this time comes around, he always has his guys ready. And how can you hate Coach K? It's just – it's Duke. So, but my –
like, it's Duke if you take the K out.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. How come people like North Carolina, but they don't like Duke? And they're pretty much the same team. They're right down the street from each other.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, kind of what we just touched on. It's all about rivalry, right? I mean, it's just – I don't know. I mean, for me, I mean, if you're a North Carolina fan, you can't – like, it's just like you can't like Duke.
I mean, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just from the outside looking in. You always hear, I like Coach K, but I don't like Duke. But you never hear, hey –
That's weird.
Yeah, North Carolina, Duke, they've had about the same amount of success, and but people – they tend to like North Carolina, but they don't like Duke.
It's got to be the Jordan brand.
Is it the Jordan brand, or is it more – you have more African-American players in North Carolina, and Duke, they've had more white players.
Right.
Could that be it?
I think there's definitely layers to it. I think the Jordan brand does make an effect because, let's be honest – North Carolina jerseys do look way better than Duke jerseys.
I had a North Carolina jersey, too. So, I don't lie.
I mean, you'd probably be out there somewhere, go to Fair Park or something. I'm sure you'll run across Michael Jordan North Carolina jerseys, Vince Carter North Carolina jerseys. So it's like, how often are you really going to run across? Like, I don't even – I've seen it online, but I don't ever see anybody wearing a Kyrie Irving Duke jersey.
That's true.
I rarely see a Grant Hill Duke jersey. But you're going to see a North Carolina jersey a lot more often than you would see a Duke jersey. So, but I think the fact that the white players, like, it's kind of like they're more like the preppy, they're more the rich kids
going
to Duke, and like the less guys go to North Carolina. But, I think that all has a plus. And then because they're, you know, kind of like what we're going to touch on the next topic with the team that's always like really good every year, we're going to expect them to, because one thing you say is, like, North Carolina had years where their recruiting wasn't as good. And for some reason, look at Zion Williamson. He wants to go to Duke.
He went to Duke.
And I'm like, dude, like, you know, I'm like, would Zion have, you know, more, like, because I feel like when you play for Duke, it's the team, then the player.
Yes.
But I feel like most other teams, it's the player, then the team. And I feel like you're in South Carolina, you could have gone to North Carolina, and you could play for North Carolina and probably got more shine and more national recognition playing for North Carolina than you would at Duke. And I'm pretty sure the reason he picked Duke is probably because who are the other guys that are coming in with him
are
probably a way better talent, and those guys are only going there because of Coach K.
Yeah.
They're not going there because it's Duke. They're going there because Coach K can go to any school. Players are following him wherever he goes.
Well, let me ask you this. We don't like Duke, but who is your favorite Duke player?
Oh, I mean, I got to go. Duke, who is my favorite player that came out of Duke?
Yes, that came out of
Duke. Kyrie, for sure.
Kyrie?
Yeah.
I'll give you Kyrie. You know who I like? I like Christian Latham.
Yeah.
Christian Lane, that was a bad dude. He didn't take any mess.
You're on the original dream team. You can't take nothing back.
And, yeah, I give it that. But he actually had a decent career in the NBA. A lot of people kind of slept on him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I like Christian Lane. I like his whole demeanor and everything. He carried Duke.
He was that guy who was going to go out there and give it his all. He was going to get on the floor, get dirty, make plays. And
he was a superstar. You don't see that too often.
Exactly.
Let's talk about a team that we didn't see coming, and that's I always struggle to say this. Can you say that name for me? Loyola
Chicago.
Yeah. Okay, can you name any players from that team?
Nope.
But what's one name you can name?
Sister Jean.
Do you have a problem with that she's getting so much shine and the players aren't?
I do. I think that, March Madness is made for these kind of teams to come out of the woodworks and to be talked about, just so that people realize all over the nation that even somebody that lives in Chicago, you know, if you're like in middle school, you might not know about like Loyola Chicago. You know about University of Illinois.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but because that's just like, oh, I'm a Fighting Illini. Like, that's like those wouldn't pass down. No, but there's other schools in that state that also have some kind of value. So, and I think, you know, March Madness is like, it brings out, like, you know, I remember a couple years back, it was Wichita State. It was like just going crazy.
And George Mason.
Florida Gulf Coast was a couple years ago, too. So it was like, but when those teams are like making, you know, having upsets and stuff like that, it's like, oh, like there's this other school and they can talk about some of the players and trials and tribulations and, you know, how the team even got to where they were, you know, where the school is even located. I mean, just the geographical sense of how many students go there, all that. You can actually cover that particular school so that your average person who's watching can also be like, oh, you know, that school, and you know, certain schools obviously have a specialty, like certain schools are really good at, you know, medicine, you know, certain schools are really good at engineering, but unless you do your research on your own, well, you're not going to go find that. But this way, in this case, I'm sure Loyola Chicago has like a particular program that they're really good at, but what the Loyola? I mean, I only know they're in Chicago because it has the word
in Chicago.
I
mean, you're right.
Where it is, you know, but the fact that they're actually advancing, and it's a great story. And I think the school and the team should, because who knows when we'll ever hear about Loyola Chicago again? What if they don't even make the tournament for the next 10 years? You'd be like, oh yeah, I remember like back in 2018, you know, that shouldn't be the conversation. It should be like, oh, Loyola Chicago, like these guys came out of this and this and this. And, you know, and I'm sure there's stories within the team, within the locker room, like guys who got cut, or guys who, you know, came from basically poverty, whatever it is. Like, there's so many stories, and I'm sure that there is, and I feel like they should be able to cover those things. But unfortunately, Sister Jean is just being kind of like, she's like the spokesperson.
It's like she's out there playing, actually. I mean, they're interviewing her like she was out there putting in work.
She's dropping enough points to basically connect with her age, I guess. No, I don't like it. But I think that's also part of the media's fault. It's nothing to do with her.
No, it's not her at all. Yeah, because
this has nothing to do with her. This is just a media circus. But yeah, it is what it is, I guess.
Let me ask you this. Are you a fan of the Cinderella teams advancing, or are you more a Chalk? Would you rather see the Chalk teams?
Oh, I'm all about Cinderella teams. Just because, you know, you want to give it something different. Like, because every year, Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, you know, those are your four main, you know, Villanova, you know, is kind of in that bubble, I guess you could say, too, but you know, it's like it could get a little bit, I don't want to say old, but it just gives you something to look forward to when it's not as expected of what the outcome might be. I mean, I could say 8-9 years ago, it was like Syracuse was always going to probably make the Final Four, you know. And now it's making recruiting more challenging for coaches so that they know it's all about not just getting that one star player, but it's all about getting complementary players to. They can all kind of play an integral part of the team instead of like, no, we're going to build our turnaround around just one guy. And so, it, you know, it gives these other schools, like we, you know, like we mentioned with the George Mason, Florida Gulf Coast, and, you know, Team Wichita State and Loyola Chicago, it gives them the platform to be also to be mentioned and talked about, and not always just a top tier team all the time.
Well, let me ask you this. As far as, now I'm for the Cinderellas in the first week. After that, I want Chalk. Only reason I say that, just think about ratings. Think about schools that travel like Kentucky and North Carolina, all those teams. Think about the effects that has on the city that's hosting it. Mm-hmm. Because once they leave, who's there?
Right.
The Cinderella teams, they don't travel as well as the other ones.
Of course.
So And then towards the end, you're expecting the Cinderella teams to get blown out. So this year has just been an exception. So I'd rather go chalk. I'd rather see Kansas play against North Carolina, like we're going to get Kansas and Duke tonight. Michigan is still in there, but do we think that they can beat some of those other teams like Duke? That's why I like to chalk. So speaking of something that people really they don't like, Bleacher Report had an article asking, is the women's UConn team, are they good for women's college basketball?
I think they're terrific for women's college basketball because I think it gives every girl that's in middle school, high school, that they're playing basketball, you're striving to figure out a way to be on the UConn women's team. Well, if you're trying that hard and your skill level is really good, but you're right underneath the cut, it means you're probably good enough to pretty much make any other roster that's in Division One. So it's a good model to go after. It's kind of like how they run their organization. It's very similar to, San Antonio Spurs, I guess, in the NBA, Alabama football. Like, it's very consistent. It's very precise. It's, everything is, by the book. And as if you come in, and Gino's going to play you, but, I've seen so many interviews with Gino where, just because you're the star player on the team doesn't mean he's going to give you more freedom just because you are the star player.
Yeah, he's a great
– If you're messing up, you're going to be sitting on the bench. I don't care if you drop 30 every game. You're going to be sitting on the bench, and that's what I like about him. And so – but, of course, if you develop a system where, your team is great and then performing every year and always go to Final Fours, you're probably more likely even winning championships. Well, every great player that's a McDonald's High School All-American is all going to want to go there. Even if they know that they probably get more shine at another school, they'd rather just still be part of a winning team. And I think, obviously, when it comes to women, they're a lot less selfish.
Yes, that's right.
They're more team-oriented because a lot of these women, the percentages are a little different because of – they don't have necessarily the profession that they can go to like the NBA guys do because, in WNBA, where there's like 10 teams or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's not, they do have to pursue a different career path, probably more like, unless they go overseas or something. So, I think it's great for the NCAA. It's like, for me, I'm like, if you have a problem with them, then
beat them. Yeah.
Exactly, beat them.
And I think with the college game,
it's not like they're unbeatable.
Yeah. We saw last year Mississippi State was able to take them down, and you never know tomorrow when they play against South Carolina, that should be a good game.
Mm-hmm.
But with that game, with the college game in general, it's all about coaching.
Yep.
And that's why I think Dawn Staley isn't as good a coach as people say she is, because look at that roster that she has. They have the most talented and athletic girls in college. There's no way they should be losing to UConn.
Right.
No way.
Right.
So that's why Gino, he's the best. His system is consistent. Like you said, he's like the San Antonio Spurs. That's like the Duke program.
Yep.
Gino, he's the best ever, and I think a lot of people don't like him because he's cocky and from his interviews, and they don't want to see him really surpass Pat Summitt, which he's already done.
Right.
And that's another rivalry that I wish that they never would have got rid of with Tennessee versus UConn, but now that's not even a rivalry. So now we're going to move on to our next segment, the Ringworm, and we're going to start off talking about Macaulay Culkin is going to wrestle Rusev. And in WrestleMania, you always have that one match that has to be the goofy, more entertainment. But I think with Rusev right now, he's hot because of Rusev Day. Why not build on that and give him a formidable opponent?
They should probably have John Cena put him. Rusev fight would have been okay for me. I think if I'm not mistaken, John Cena looks like he's probably going to be fighting Kane.
No, he's going to be fighting Undertaker. He's fighting Kane tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
But then the Undertaker, he'll probably come out.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I agree. Even Braun Strowman would have been great, for him. I think would have been a great, two, big guys kind of on, size levels. But I think it could have been really well. But, are they recording like Home Alone 3, 4 or something like that?
They got to be for this. It makes no sense. Why bring Macaulay Culkin in? Out of everybody?
At least bring somebody out that's like somewhat of a decent size. You can't just, bring in Vin Diesel or somebody. Like, you can't bring in no
Macaulay Culkin
dude that's going to be big as one of his arms into, like, come on, man. This was like Gilbert. You remember Gilbert?
Oh my God! Yeah, I remember Gilbert.
That's like the equivalent of how Macaulay Culkin looks. And
so I think what's going to happen, of course, they're going to get in the ring. Whoever Rusev is probably going to fight next is going to come out, knock him out. Macaulay Culkin is going to get the win, and then we're going to move on. Just it's predictable.
Or unless I'm interested in seeing how they bring The Rock in for WrestleMania. I'm sure he's going to be there. So it's like, how are they going to bring him in? Because last year they brought him in with Stone Cold. And
well, that could be how they can bring him in.
Right. And, you know, somebody to come help him out. Didn't Rusev and The Rock have a little...
Yeah, it was something.
But so that could kind of be built off from that, where The Rock could come in, Stone Cold could come in, you know, to kind of save the day for...
Or even Hulk.
One of my favorite movies.
Jabroni.
Yeah.
Even Hulk Hogan, because they were trying to bring him back as well. So we'll see.
Or any of the guys that are even getting into the Hall of Fame that are... they could bring some of those guys in, too.
3D.
3D?
Well, let's talk about Braun Strowman. Speaking of 3D and tag teams, he's looking for a tag team partner for WrestleMania to take on The Bar. Who do you see being his tag team partner?
Well, now that you said that, his John Cena is probably not going to be facing Kane. Then I would probably go with Kane, just because I know they have that little rivalry going on there. I think it'd be pretty cool with two big dudes. Kane doesn't probably really have another match.
No, he didn't.
You know, so I think that would be pretty cool to have Kane go along with Braun Strowman to face The Bar. It's not like Braun Strowman couldn't beat him by himself. It's getting frustrating just why they're not giving Braun Strowman, like, he should be in the championship match.
I think he's going to get a push at the WrestleMania. He's going to get a real push because
he needs to get the championship. I don't care how long it takes, but he needs to get it.
Because they said that Samoa Joe is coming back and he's going to be the feud for Roman Reigns after he wins the title. And I would love to see Samoa Joe win the title because he's good. And then it could be Samoa Joe versus Braun Strowman.
Yep.
And I've also heard, and I told you this off air, how Bobby Lashley may be signed with WWE, so they may be his tag team partner.
Okay.
And they may not announce it until the match starts.
Right.
So he can get that pop.
Of course. Yeah, you gotta always build it, right? I mean, it's you know, they always obviously have these surprise people that come out, but it's also there's guys who come out that's like they're grand entrance, but now they're coming back for good. You know?
Yeah, see, and I don't want to see Kane. I'm tired of seeing Kane. It's time for Kane to go.
It's been long overdue for Kane to go, but I was just thinking, instead of, since he's still there, you know, he's still at least got a little bit of a name than some of these other guys that do on the roster. So
yeah, so if it's not Lashley, I see one of the guys from NXT coming up. I guess the champion, I don't know if he may have just lost or maybe the guy EC3 that came from TNA or Impact, wherever he came from. Right. So I can see that.
I think it would be, you know, it would actually be pretty cool because, you know, Braun Strowman would be talking about you going to get these hands. I think it would be pretty cool to bring in Chris Jericho. You made the list. The Bar made the list. I mean, it would be pretty cool. It'd be a little different.
You know what?
Not wrestling right now.
You know, I love me some Chris Jericho, so he can come in at any point and just.
And it's always going to be entertaining.
He know how to recreate himself. So, speaking of somebody that's coming back, we got Daniel Bryan, who's been cleared.
It's exciting. It's awesome.
And the pop that he got was just amazing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's just how it was when he wrestled. So, now we have him back. He'll be wrestling probably full-time after WrestleMania.
Yes.
So, who do you think, not WrestleMania, because we already know it'll probably be him and Shane versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who should be his first real opponent after WrestleMania?
If depending on who wins out of AJ Styles and Shinsuke.
And Shinsuke, yeah.
I mean, I think it would be, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys. If not, then maybe Kevin Owens could be another one. It could also be John Cena. I think John Cena could be, because now he's kind of freelancing, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he's a free agent.
You know, so if they decide to put him on SmackDown, because I think Raw is good even without John Cena.
Well, now you're not going to have a superstar shakeup.
Again.
Yeah, they're going to have it. Yeah, right. So Finn Balor
would be cool. Yeah, that would be great.
I don't know why I can't think of his name right now from The Shield. What's the main guy? The Architect. Why can't I think of his name? Seth Rollins,
yeah.
Him and Seth Rollins, that would be a good match.
Yeah.
Because they got to shake it up because SmackDown.
What happened to the third one?
Torn bicep. He's going to be out like 9 months. So he should be coming back, and they need to bring The Shield back.
Yeah.
Because Roman Reigns, he's starting to get over a little bit, but with the Shield, it's just a different monster. We have those kind of factions. It makes
huge,
it better.
Huge difference, and I think it just gave. They're not like the NWO, but like it's still something that like makes you just like they could still have their own individual. That's the one thing that like I wish they would understand that. Like, these guys should just be able to go out there, regardless of if somebody is good or bad. But if somebody else is coming in there and beating somebody else up, we go in there and clean it up. But we all individually have our own rivalries, mm-hmm. have our own matches, we got our own possible titles, opportunities. It doesn't necessarily have to be, like, 3 versus 3. It's like, we come in, we clean up, but you're not going to come try to mess with us. And if you do, we'll show you what's up. But if anybody else is getting beat up in the ring or it's like 3-on-1, we're going to come in there, clean house, and we're going to leave. And then we all have our individual matches. That's that. And I think they could create something where it's like they're known as those guys who are like the protectors or whatever you want
to call them. Yeah, because they're the hands of justice, right? That's what they call themselves. So that'd be perfect. What I want to see, though, if they do have the shakeup, the Usos need to go to Raw.
Yeah.
New Day, it's kind of getting old.
They need to split that up.
Maybe keep Kofi and Xavier Woods together. Yeah. Let Big E go off.
Big E's too big and too strong and too good of a wrestler to not be
competing for titles.
Right.
Because that was good when CM Punk was there with him because they had AJ and they were all together. So I'm trying to think of what the Bar. They need to keep them together because they're a good tag team. Maybe Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, because they say when Bray Wyatt is coming back, he's going to be different. So maybe those two could be a tag team. Yeah. I could see them being pretty good. Give Rusev somebody, not that Aiden English guy that he's with now. Give him somebody else. Maybe Lashley wouldn't work. So I don't know. So I want to talk about one more thing before we go, and we're not going to give our actual prediction on this match, but we have Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss now. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, do you think it's time for Nia Jax to actually win the title?
Yes, I do. I think Alexa Bliss has had the championship for a little bit. And I think it would be pretty cool to see somebody, you know, where they look at the women's division, everybody's like the cute pretty blonde or the brunette or, you know, small but got a good figure. But I think it would be pretty cool to give it to somebody that's like a little bigger, you know, kind of like, I mean, she's even bigger than China, you know. So
yeah.
I think it'd be pretty cool to see somebody that's not of the normal size but dominating, but at the same time still has a good character to kind of build around. I mean, you know, this should happen for at least a couple of months just to give it a different flavor so it's not the same thing over and over. And then maybe that can be the setup for, you know, Ronda Rousey to face her, maybe eventually to, like, show she's actually not only beating just a wrestler, she's actually beating somebody that's a bigger opponent.
Because it's so predictable in the women's matches when you have Nia Jax in this Royal Rumble that everybody's going to go after her to try to throw her out. And they really can't because she's the biggest, she's the strongest, and she's not bad. She's not bad on the eyes, man. If you notice when they always start off, they start off with her eyes because she has beautiful eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they dry out. And the thing is, that's The Rock's cousin. So why isn't she getting the push?
Oh,
yeah. When they had that accident, when it was his mom and the cousin, that was her that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't she getting a bigger push being The Rock's cousin? Or maybe have The Rock come out during that match to get that push over for his cousin because they're trying to make her a babyface.
Gotcha. Yes,
so we're,
yeah, I think it would be pretty cool. Like I said, it'll just throw something, a little wrench in the whole system, right? It just like give it something different so that giving people something that they had no idea that's coming as opposed to a pretty good idea or... Oh, I know who's going to win this.
Yeah, and it's already a match that we're going to talk about next week that we know the person's going to win.
Right.
So next week on the Ringworm, we're going to give our WrestleMania winners who we think are going to win. And we want to thank you for listening to Episode 13. We want to thank the Robert Media Group and Blog Talk Radio for giving us this platform. We want to thank you for listening. We'll see you next time for Episode 14. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice, that's why. All my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.